Welcome to the 88 Names podcast with your hosts, Blake Collier and Matt Ruff. On today's episode, we will be talking to Drew Stone, founder of Locusium, a virtual reality event production company.
Drooted is a proud sponsor of the 88 Names podcast. Drooted, immersive experiences and interactive activations helping brands connect globally. Find case studies and more at drooted.com.
So for those of you who may not know who you are, do you mind telling us a little bit about yourself?
Oh, yeah. I'm Drew Stone. I'm this tall. I was born and raised in the Pacific Northwest, and I've traveled around a little bit, but it is so gorgeous here. It's my favorite place. I've been interested in technology and tinkering with things as a maker and artist for my whole life. And also as the eldest of 10 grandchildren, I was also the de facto babysitter. So I've always been taking care of people and trying to figure out what's going on to make sure that everyone's needs are taken care of. But that's what I love to do. I love bringing people together.
Awesome.
So what was your personal introduction to VR?
Oh, this was, I think, back in 2016. I was doing some startup work. And this company I was working for wanted to do this monetization for media type of channel. And I was reading a lot of buzz about VR. And it really started to get my excitement up. And I said, hey, guys, you got to figure out how to, if you want to be really serious about this future tech, figure out how you're going to integrate with VR. And they said, okay, go figure that out. And I was like, oh, geez, that's, okay, well, it's on me. So I reached out to one of my friends who I'd known had been involved in the VR scene, Ryan Budino. And I gave him a call and I said, Ryan, I know you've been like deeply steeped in this. He's a writer. I view him as kind of like a historian for the Seattle VR scene. And he said, I can't explain it to you either. There's a hackathon coming up in 2 weeks. I suggest you go and do it. And so I was like, okay, well, you know, I've done like startup weekend events and hackathons and stuff before. And I showed up at the fourth Seattle VR hackathon. And at the end of that event, not only did my team win one of the categories, but I was just amplified. I was like looking at all the potential and seeing all of these really fresh, innovative ideas popping up all over the place from the different teams. And that's where I decided to start steering my energy to try and be ahead of the puck, as Wayne Gretzky would say.
Nice.
So we're recording this at the end of March 2021, in what we were all hoping is the final round of the COVID pandemic. And obviously, I mean, this has been a bad year for everybody, but it's been, I guess, slightly less bad for people who are doing various forms of teleconferencing and online stuff. So how has the pandemic affected your business in general? Like, just, is it made it harder to work? You know, what's it been like for you?
It actually kind of like dovetails really perfectly. The first client I had was a company that wanted to do their annual event in virtual reality, obviously, because people were distant. Some had like flown to Colorado. They're based in Minneapolis, but so many people are still working from home in October, November, and December. And it's in October when the client reached out to me to say, hey, we do this big company-wide event. We shut down they have a whole building, I think. And so they shut down the whole building, and it's just an entire day of games. And they weren't able to do it safely. And so fortunately, I was at the right place at the right time. And I said, hey, I'm starting a VR events production company, and I think I can help. So they had a need. I had skills and in a really similar way to John Chu, I'm a virtual reality event Sherpa.
That's awesome.
So and the other question, I guess, is how much of this change is permanent? Like, do you think once, you know, people are able to go outside and see each other face to face again, is this going to tail off? Or do you think that like work from home is now with us permanently, as people, because people find out it's actually in some ways is actually kind of nice not to have to commute?
Yeah, absolutely. I really think that it kind of depends on what it is that you want to do and where it is that you're coming from. So from a business perspective, boy, is it cheaper to have a conference where you just let your employees and teams sit at home in their pajamas. I don't know if people are bummed out that they're missing on their per diems, but but no travel, no commute, no having to like check in and register or lose luggage or anything like that. So the financial costs of doing business in VR, doing community and you know collective events in VR is lower. But there really is nothing that is quite the same as standing in front of somebody. We're really sensitive people. We can hear and smell and taste, and we can pick up the pheromones of other people. And those really do help to guide the depth of our interactions and our kind of like our gut check sense of feeling. Even though virtual reality is very good for some things, it's not excellent for everything. I guess maybe yet we're not quite at the full deep metaverse. You know, if the technology gets there were these cool, what were they, olfactory sensors that you could clip onto the bottom of your headset, and they would like spray out these little either pheromones or terpenes or something. And they came out just as the pandemic was happening. And I was really? Like, that's great. Just like, I want to put on a VR headset and have stuff splashed at my face. So, but I was really excited about that tech, but I haven't heard much about it lately. So
really? So I'm gonna say, yeah. Interesting. I'm amazed that didn't catch on immediately.
I guess to bring it back around, you know, I'm going to have a birthday party in a couple of months, and I used to do like these really big birthday parties. It's either feast or famine for me. I've had a birthday party where not single person showed up, which was sad. But I've also on the other end, you know, hundreds of people with friends of mine as DJs playing all throughout the night. I rent out an entire bar and do that. And I miss that greatly. And it's definitely not time to bring everyone together yet in the end of May. So I'm like looking at several different VR and hybrid platforms to try and reach my friends and family where they are and bring them together. So virtual reality is one, although like many of my friends have VR headsets, maybe more than the norm, but I know that like many of my family don't, other people that live in other parts of the country and the world don't. So I'm looking at figuring out what web-based interface or if some phone-based interface would work better for different sections. So I'm exploring this right now, but boy, howdy, would I love to get like a couple of hundred of my friends together and do, you know, hugs and, you know, art projects and singing and you know, fun and games together. So until then, I'm going to try and make the best of it and make smart choices that kind of like give people what they want. Because that's what's satisfying for me, is to see the delight on people's faces when they mm-hmm. Are really enjoying themselves. That's, I guess, one of the things that I'm looking forward to. Even though people can't get together safely, I want that connection. I want the worries to be washed away. But the technology as a medium is also, it's a medium, it's in the way, it's a mediation between the two spaces. So I think that virtual reality connection and virtual reality events are gonna continue to grow and flourish, and there's gonna be even new opportunities that come up with it. But when we're all able to like high-five each other and you know, give like long, deep, meaningful hugs and pat each other on the back really closely, I think that there's the technology is here, and it's getting better, really better by the day right now. So take that, Moore's law.
Yeah, there you go. Well, you bring up the really simple idea of it being a medium and that still being a intermediary between two parties. And this kind of leads into my question. How do you think VR and AR arenas are at their most effective in bringing people together? And ultimately, going back to the pandemic, how do you think the pandemic has affected those platforms? Has it largely harmed, or has it largely kind of helped kind of progress those platforms?
Great question. AR and VR are more effective at bringing people together when that is the core element is visual. Right. You put on a VR headset and you have a 6 DOF or 3 DOF movement. You have what you see and then you have what you hear. So for events or engagements, where those are the primary things, there's an interest in bringing and having VR facilitate those. There is another thing that happens in collaborative VR spaces or in social VR spaces, which is when you get to stand next to somebody and you see them talk and motion, and we get this sense of body language. And that also feeds into what we perceive from our visual and kind of like gut sense. So when you want to bring people together to look at art and then have a free forum discussion about it, or be able to move around the piece and look at it from different ways, I think that that's a fantastic use of augmented and virtual reality. Or I'm thinking specifically more of VR now, and I'll touch on augmented reality in a second. There are some breaks, though, to that structure. Yeah. Like bringing people together to watch a movie can work. You know, that's really kind of nice. I remember one of the first experiences I had, it was at Oculus Kinect 5, and I attended in my Oculus Go headset. It was nice. I felt like I was like on the cutting edge, especially because on the I was reading on a stream chat that people with Rift weren't able to get in, I think. And so for some reason, they were only allowing people on Oculus Go to do that. And I was like, okay, this is nice. And so I was sitting in the Oculus venues or spaces, I can't remember which it was at the time. And there was this warm feeling to seeing all of the avatars in the rows in front of me with their, you know, unconscious body ticks and hand movements. And it felt lively. It felt rich and engaging. But it was also supremely annoying because people would come in with their mics defaulted on. And while people were trying to figure out their own control panels, they would be cursing over here or have loud music, dog barking in the background. And this tumult was really harshing my mellow for the medium. So I ended up moving over to like a far part of the seating area where people weren't kind of like standing up in front of me and doing that. And then I turned down the audience volume so I couldn't hear anything but the main presentation. And then somebody else hopped over to me and stood right in front of me and said, "Wow, isn't this great?" And I typed back, "Yeah, I'm trying to enjoy this presentation." So I mean, that it worked in the type of way that it let people feel and be themselves, even while they were struggling through doing this. But I found that I wanted to engage with the content that was being presented. So this is another way that it like comes close, and this vector just kind of like misses a little bit. When I'm sure that Facebook was doing something really innovative, and some people probably found this really fun, but at the live events, they had probably 6 or 7 360 cameras or 180 cameras that were placed around, and they would move your VR view from camera to camera about once a minute or once every 2 minutes. And I found that really distracting and disrupting. One, I wasn't asked for consent to have my view changed. And then the other thing that was happening is one of the presenters would come up and show a table of data. And I was like, "Oh, great, I've got a front row seat for this." And then all of a sudden, the timer switched and I got thrown to the back of the room. And now there's this teeny little thumbnail with the content on it. And there was just no way I could read it. And I was like, "Oh, this is so, so close." But I ended up viewing it as kind of a failure. I think I wrote a Medium post about it. And I think that there was also a missed opportunity. They knew what content was going to be displayed on the screen behind Zuckerberg and all the other presenters. They knew that people were going to be wearing headsets. Why not match those two together, right? So to really deliver the best experience content to the people that are your fanboys and girls and biggest champions are there in the VR headsets, reward them with the content that is going to give them the excellent experience. So that being said, that's one of the things that can work well. But thinking through the user experience process is critically important. Augmented reality from a live events point of view is, man, there really is so much potential there. Like, sure, you could print up a bunch of cards. People have taken to just doing QR codes where their information gets transferred that way. But augmented reality using like QR codes or Vuforia or any of number emerging tech that's coming out can really show more of your physical product or show a narrative storyline about how your product is supposed to be used, and to really make something interesting that's a takeaway that they can have. In some cases, it can be a takeaway, but in other cases, it might be that this augmented reality experience is just a teaser for this convention. And so it raises the potential for excitement and FOMO, that if you weren't there to see this one thing, and that increases the scarcity of it, which I think raises, you know, the excitement and intensity. That's kind of what I have for what it's good for. The problem still in other VR spaces and social VR, when you're presenting like visual content, either like a movie or a presentation, because it's a social space and you can't control, while people have free movement, they're able to move around. Whether or not they're well behaved to sit in their seat and watch the thing, very rarely, and this kind of ties back to one of my bigger gripes about OC5, was you can't really get close enough to the screen to see a detailed chart of data unless it's like super, super big. So it's almost there. You get all the way and you get a presenter standing up and he's showing the data. And unless maybe you are in the front seat, you're the resolution of your headset won't be able to render the thing. You won't be able to make any use of it. So studying that type of user experience can lead to better practices. Like if you're doing a slide in VR, make sure that the minimum text size is, I tested one, it was 80, looked good to me, you know, because that way somebody who is in a space far enough back would be able to get the sense of what's happening there or read clearly what the lines are. Because if you're presenting content that people can't understand, well, what's the point? You just kind of missed it. So in thinking through these types of things, how it can happen. But after that type of event, getting people to engage and naturally move from group conversation to group conversation, that's a huge benefit. You know, if that's really what depends on what you want your audiences to get out of the thing.
Oh, that's good. So you mentioned in one of our pre-interview emails that like one of your concerns is trying to make sure that people's experience with VR is friendly and safe.
Right.
And obviously, you know, harassment is a big issue online and not just in VR. And you know, one of the themes of 88 Names is that it's actually a challenge to get people to play nicely with each other. We're actually fairly clever. This is especially in virtual environments where you can't or don't want to monitor every interaction. And you know, people who want to be mean are pretty good at finding ways to work around the rules set up to stop that. So what are your thoughts on how to best approach that? Like, what's your thinking on?
Yeah, great question. When I was asked by, I'm going to tell a little story here. So I was asked by the organizers of the largest anime convention on the West Coast, SakuraCon. I was asked to deliver virtual reality demos as a special booth in their gaming area. And I went through and volunteers, and it's an all-volunteer nonprofit, by the way. Everyone who is at SakuraCon, except for the board of directors, is volunteering their time. And they in turn get an annual membership to SakuraCon. So that's one of the things that I think is really heartening about this particular convention is everyone is there for the love of what they're doing. But when I was training my staff in order to give VR demos to largely people that had never even tried VR before, I cautioned them. I said, this might be the first time somebody has used VR, and it also could be their last. So if you have a negative impression, if you find something makes you queasy, there's low incentive to come back and do it again. From that kind of cultural point of view, including consent and talking through what the hardware is, how to do the controls before you slap the headset on somebody, and doing this kind of transmissible knowledge share is, I really think, the way to go with it. So I really am delighted when I'm doing events and there's new users of VR, because I have the privilege and the responsibility to help teach them the better practices, norms, and cultures of having a positive VR experience. So if that's all of they know, from their first experience, that's what they're going to be able to transmit to other people. And so culture spreads in this type of way with shared knowledge, shared understandings of what's going on. And then that, if that's the base vocabulary that we start with, then that is what people start to convey how to do and what VR is about to other people. So that's one place to start. Mitigating trolls is a challenge. One of the things that that I've heard recently is that trolling is wanting, it's like wanting some kind of attention, wanting to be involved and engaged with a group. So sometimes it's being engaged with the group by being the worst thing there so that they can raise and draw the energy out from other people, irritating them and doing those things. And that is the food source. That is the energy exchange for the troll. So on some cases, there are people that just want to see the world burn or just want to see an event disrupted. And it's not for me to psychoanalyze what are the different reasons why people would do something like that. However, there are times that trolls would enter a space or enter a group and tell a joke, maybe tell like an off-color joke. And there could be a couple of reasons why they would do that. They might see how much they can get away with in this group. They might tell that joke, being on the negative side class, to see if they could actually be comfortable in this group. So if somebody comes in, they tells a joke that disparages their a privileged class or something that they happen to be a part of. In VR, you don't know necessarily what class is. And if you get a bunch of raucous laughter, it's a really quick way for you to determine that those people are actually not going to be a good social group for you. So you can move on. Unfortunately for that is that telling jokes that are harmful in this type of way amplify that type of negative stereotype, but it's difficult to figure out in a really quick way through VR, you know, without pheromones, without so much body language, to find out what your in-group is. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm like a extrovert, ambivert type of person. I love getting engaged with people and hearing them talk and asking questions and getting their ideas, and then being able to move and see with the types of people that I like. But as much as I love VR, I don't find it super comfortable to just go to a random group of people in VR to try and make friends. There's nothing for me, or there's very little, unless it's inside of a specialized group, like a meetup that has a particular topic, or we're there to centered to talk or discuss or view one particular type of thing that I know we have in common. I get a lot of my cues from, visual, spatial types of things that it's not quite there yet for me in VR. So I just think that it's kind of interesting for me. As much as I love meeting new people, I like meeting new people on terms that I feel like I can really understand. And the completely blank slate of VR doesn't excite me as much in that way. But I have been showing up in, especially I've been studying more and more different social VR platforms and hybrid platforms. I have been able to connect with people in those spaces because I feel a kinship with them that we're both, or the several of us, are trying to figure out what our place is on this technology. Now, and maybe if I applied that frame to VR, that it'd be helpful. But I guess I'm also a little bit wary that there is a high likelihood of trolling in social spaces. So you never really know. And then until you're sorry, but, but what is it? You don't say you're sorry if you're just unhappy with the consequences of your behavior.
Oh yeah. There's genuinely being sorry. And then there's just being unhappy with the consequences of your actions. Yeah.
Right.
So this maybe kind of segues into my next question, which is basically, obviously VR and AR are still developing technologies. And we one of the things we've asked a number of our guests before is if you had an unlimited budget a research budget, are there specific improvements in the technology that you would focus on or developments that you would hasten along that, would particularly help your use of the technology or that you would just be really excited to see?
Ooh, wow. That's a great question. I think that if I had all of the money to deploy an initiative that would serve VR communities very well. It would be to lower the cost of entry into virtual reality. I think that accessibility is one of the key constraints that we have here. It's it favors the privileged. I mean, people that can afford to have a fancy computer rig and a VR headset or even a standalone headset, you know, still not, you know, cheap. You know, it's like several grocery bills and in some cases, people's entire month's rent. So that's one thing, is the accessibility to the tech simply, but also accessibility more generally, because not everyone interacts with VR in the same way. So frequently we have, you know, a six-dot headset that fits a standard shaped head. And then you have two controllers with all of these different buttons on them. Well, not everyone has two working eyes and a well-formed head or fingers all in the right place. These people are still as worthy of engaging with virtual reality in these new emergent communities as anyone else. And so those are what I think are some of the bigger constraints. Fortunately, over this past week, there's been lots of news from motion, like wristband types of controllers that you can train with different muscle movements to map. The article I was listening to was indicating that in the future, people would be able to map their own control sets through something that didn't use their fingers for a contact, but uses the twitch response in their muscles. And so I think that that is really, really getting somewhere cool too. But then this also kind of butts up against privacy and personal agency and all this data collection that is required to meaningfully transmit these signals into what you want to see in VR. And in order for the technology to be continually improving and serving these end users, there's huge data profiles, like physiographic, psychographic profiles that are based on, you know, where you are, who else is in this space, what are you looking at, what did you just do, what are your available options, what is your biometrics, did your heart rate go up, are you having like a stress response? Like all of these different types of things are not scary, but if there's no great plan for how to use them, that unknown can become a really meaningful fear. That's what I would do. If I had all the money, I would make sure that everyone could engage with VR as much as they possibly could to the level of their own interest.
Good. Yeah. So if you could almost sum up the vision for your company or basically what the end goal for your company is in like a motto, like what would you say is the end goal for your company?
Positive, generative culture design.
Beautiful. That's good. Well, that's all. go ahead. No, go for it.
Oh yeah. Soon after that first VR hackathon, there was another We Make Realities was the name of the group that put the thing on, as kind of a new work share hackathon day to mm-hmm. try and figure out stuff. And after seeing the way that VR can help engage people, I knew that there were going to be communities that were going to be forming in these VR spaces. Whether or not they are formed consciously and meaningfully is up to us, right? Otherwise, the VR or VR social VR could, you know, be another 4chan or 8chan or anything else. So I saw this as an opportunity to help try and serve both developers and users of VR at the same time. So one of those ideas that I came up with was called the VR culture tutorial. And the idea was that I would either create a VR experience and some documentation that would come along with it that would instruct new users of VR etiquette, norms, with little examples that are in there, including, you know, running up too close or pushing your hand through somebody else's face and an avatar or other, you know, gesticulations, which are inappropriate. But also to have this be as a guide for developers that would help mm-hmm. facilitate their thought process to incorporate ethics and design and accessibility into their designs. But it was still such early days, and I was really starting from nothing. And so my couple of attempts to try and get something like that going, they kind of fizzled, but the thought process was there the whole time. And so in the end of 2020, I was working on founding this company, Locosium. And there was a post-it note on my whiteboard. It was in the corner, in the upper left, which means it was a really old one. And it said VR culture design tutorial. And I thought about it for a second, and I was like, whoa, I'm starting a company where if I do things right, I have the opportunity to catch a lot of new users in VR for their very first time. And then my heart opened right up, and I was like, this is it. This was the thing that I was working on. So I am super excited for brand new users to come into VR in events that I'm hosting because of the empathetic, thoughtful, meet them where they are nature of the way that I train my staff to engage with people. Maybe I just needed to cook it on the back burner for a long time before it comes together here. But I've been really happy with the events that I've been able to put together. Feedback has been tremendous and heartwarming. When you hear people write in their own language about what of a positive effect it's had mm-hmm. and how they have appreciated the effort that I put in, it makes it for me. It's great.
That's awesome.
So is there anything we haven't covered that you'd like to talk about or say?
Oh, let me think. Oh, I guess if you're interested in doing an event in VR, I would like, you know, just scrub back through this this discussion to say, hey, is what you need to do, does it need to be in VR, or can part of it be in VR? Is the thing that's going to be in VR really going to amplify what's happening, or is it just kind of like an innovation flash in the pan thing? Which is fine if that's a low enough bar to meet, but also to consider what doesn't need to utilize the greatest tech that stresses people on learning new technology programs and protocols and expensive hardware and doing, you know, all of these other types of things. And if you want help figuring that out, I'm here to help.
And on that note, well, thank you very much for talking with us.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Matt, it's a pleasure. And Blake, thank you very much. I am going to keep listening to the 88 Names podcast.
Beautiful.
But I will say, I ordered the book a couple of days after it came out, the 88 Names, and I burned through it. I basically Excellent. Didn't do anything for a day and a half while I, you know, shuffled around, cooked dinner, read the book, went to bed, woke up, read the book, and it's, I didn't want it to be over. So thank
That's
you.
That's awesome. Well, that great is stuff, always yeah. lovely to hear. Thank you very much.
Yeah. That was awesome. Thank you so much.
Yes, my pleasure.
Yeah. Well,
see you around, guys.
Yeah, see you later.
Take it easy.
All right.
GC Records proudly sponsors this podcast. To stream or download over 20 years of music, head to gcrecords.bandcamp.com.
That is it for this episode of 88 Names Podcast. If you like the podcast, go to Apple Podcasts and give us a rating and a review, which will help us get more listeners. Remember to check back at the podcast site at riseupdaily.com/88namespodcast for the podcast introduction and upcoming written interviews and articles.